Everyone, this is episode 19 of Nature's Pulse, where I review the week's environmental news. My name is John Lieber. You can reach me on Twitter or Instagram, which is at jungle_capital. This is for the week of January 18th. It is quite an American-focused episode with the leadership change, but it impacts us all, so we'll cover that and a few other things. But let's get started with our first article. So I first want to start with the UK before we get to any of the American news. So a new study came out, and it has concluded that the flooding in the UK could increase by 15 to 35% by 2080. Parts of Scotland face 34% increase in flooding in the next 50 years, whereas southeast England there's 18% increase expected. And this is going to be a big challenge for the UK because, as many people know, especially the people that live here, and now it's quite personal to me too. It rains a lot here in Scotland. It seems like it rains almost every day. So flooding is a major challenge, and not only are they dealing with the current circumstances, but also the development is historical, and they didn't have the same type of technology when those developments were created. So they lie within floodplain zones, and protecting those buildings is a challenge because they don't want to take down heritage. And not only that, but upstream areas are becoming urbanized or agriculturalized, meaning the runoff is being channeled into the streams, which only increases the severity of the flooding. And then when you look now what this article is projected about the impacts of climate change, it is all coming together to exacerbate the flooding issues for the UK. So it's good they have the information now and they can try to start implementing adaptation measures, but it's going to be a major challenge. And this is just a sliver of all of the challenges that the urban sphere and humanity in general are going to have when facing the climate change impacts. Also, I did a new episode of Environmental Professionals this week with Mario Mora. It is episode 20, and he is a forester and an ecologist in the Western United States. We talked about the forest fire issues that happen in the Western states. We talked about practices about logging and politics and how citizens can get involved in sustainable forestry. It was a really great conversation that clarified a lot of issues and helped advance my thinking in many ways. So I would encourage you to check it out. Just go to my YouTube or podcast, just at jungle_capital, and type in Environmental Professionals episode 20 and check out that conversation. And please give me feedback if you enjoyed it. There will be a new episode coming out next week, episode 21, and it's going to be a good one. I'll just say that. So next, as promised, we will switch to looking at America. So this past week, President-elect Biden was sworn in, and therefore a lot of changes are coming and have actually already started happening, for better or for worse. People sure are giddy about this this transition, and I'm a little more cautious, to be honest, because I think people might be forgetting how he was elected and what he stands for, and it's possible that people might get their dreams crushed pretty fast, but nonetheless we'll look at what he's doing so far. So one of the first things that he's done is that he's committed to ending the Keystone XL pipeline extension. So for those who do not know what the Keystone XL pipeline is, it was proposed to go from Alberta and Canada down through the states and then to the Gulf of Mexico to be shipped and exported out to whatever countries need to be purchasing the oil. So this is it's not as clear-cut, I think, as many people like to think, because it's one of these issues where it's become highly, highly political, and even scientists seem to think that it's all bad or People in generally on the more conservative side seem to think that it's all good, but the truth is that it has pros and cons, and you can't just look at the proposal as a responsible person at one metric. So if you're looking at it specifically from the environment, you need to take into context some other aspects as well. So let's just walk through some of those. So when you're looking at the anti side of it, the more traditional position that environmentalists have taken is that basically building new infrastructure for oil is a bad investment because they're trying to take investments and put it in renewable energy sources. They also see the actual pipeline as having huge controversies around how it's being built on, like which land it's being built on. So, and the process that is being taken done is be being taken by, so which is eminent domain, meaning that the government is essentially forcing private property owners to sell their property to the government so that this pipeline can run through the land. And that has caused major protests in North Dakota with the indigenous groups there. And part of their concerns as well is that they might not be benefiting from the infrastructure economically like other people would be. And with a pipeline, there's bound to be spills, like always. And then it just expands the Alberta tar sands, which are already much more dirty than to produce than, say, Saudi Arabia, that can directly pull it out of the ground. And then on the pro pipeline side, I mean, this is simplified, but it basically boils down to it's going to create jobs and it's good for the economy, which probably is true, to be honest. I did see a stat like that it's only going to create some 53 jobs or something, full-time jobs, after it's built in the States. I think during the construction, it's supposed to create something like 3,000 jobs. So there is a bit of an economic benefit, but in the larger picture, as far as on the American side, it's really not that alluring. But on the Canadian side, of course, they are pushing it quite fiercely, because it would be a massive economic benefit for the Canadians, which I'm a Canadian as well, as you may know, but I'm also American, so I can see both sides of this picture. But there's a couple things we need to lay out on the table here to kind of get a scope, the scope, understand the scope of the bigger picture. The first thing is the geopolitics. So with this pipeline and by developing the Alberta tar sands in a more aggressive manner, which it already has been undergoing, by the way, it is expected to reduce the foreign dependency on oil that North America currently has. And I'm not saying that it really impacts the environment any better or worse, because the tar sands are much more of a more aggressive extraction process. But I'm just saying, when Saudi Arabia becomes a superpower because we are purchasing oil off of them or some of these other places, it does leave us vulnerable in that situation, and I don't know if it's necessarily something we want as far as human rights, as far as giving them influence in the world. So that's just a factor we need to consider. So by establishing oil infrastructure over here, whether that's drilling or through the tar sands, it is a strategic advantage to us. Who have believe and have democracy. So that seems like it would be one advantage to having it. The other thing is that by not building it, it's not like the Alberta tar sands are going to be shut down. They are currently, right now, the oil is extracted out of Alberta and then shipped by train out to the west coast through British Columbia. And that means that it's probably, to be honest, much more uses much more emissions and is much more high risk than this pipeline would be. So the it doesn't have the eminent domain issues. It doesn't have the necessarily all of the issues the pipeline would have as far as being directly associated with rivers, although I don't know the exact track that the trains take, but I'm assuming it has the similar type of risk, if not higher. So I think we need to look at alternatives and not have such a narrow, clean perspective on what happens when it's rejected. And that also leaves us with looking at what is the alternative, because regardless on how much we invest in renewables, we're still going to rely on oil for a variety of reasons for quite a while, and it's going to take us quite a long time to wean us off. And one of my questions was, okay, why build this infrastructure if the oil sands say they only have 30 years of oil to be extracted out of it? Because in that case, it would be a huge investment to be making in this pipeline if it was going to be a short-term project. But I googled it, and let me see here. It's pretty extraordinary. So I said, how long can oil from Alberta last? And it says here, about 375 years. So that's incredible that there's that much oil in the Alberta tar sands. What I would like to see, to be honest, in the ideal world is we know that the oil's gonna be extracted regardless. And I don't really have a particular preference on which way it's done. Obviously, I just want it to be done in the way that's gonna impact the environment the least as far as its route, which I would probably think would be a pipeline over a train, but I'm not sure of that. I would just like to see the profits being more concentrated on taking us, Canada and North America, to the next steps. So first of all, by investing heavily, almost entirely, into fusion energy, because if Canada or America can figure out the key to fusion energy, it is going to, whoever figures that out is going to be run the world, essentially. And I would like that to be us in the West. But it's not clear who has the advantage on that yet. But even whoever figures that out, it's going to change, it's going to benefit humanity in incredible ways, as I talked about, I think, in a previous or last week. And yes, I would like to see profits being put into renewable energy as well, and then mitigation efforts. My only concern with the current renewable energy is I feel like the technology is changing so fast that when you invest in it now, in 5, 10, 15 years, it's going to seem old, outdated, and obsolete. So I do worry about investing in it in a major way. But I do think that it needs to be done. And so both, not just fusion energy, but research and development into both all kinds of alternative energy. And I think it needs to be done in a way that is absolutely enormous and historical. So we need to look at where are we going to go, what is the alternative going to be, and really investing in our future rather than such a closed-minded perspective and with no nuance that just end pipeline bad, because there's so much more to it. There's a lot of nuances here. It's very political, but yeah, so hopefully this decision doesn't actually backfire and create more vulnerabilities. We've got to see what Canada does now in reaction to this. And I have a feeling that it's not going to be the last pipeline that's proposed, but we're going to find out. So now we're going to look at Flint. So people may know that Flint is really the has become the icon as far as what people think of when they think of environmental racism, and I think that it fits perfectly. So essentially what was done is that there was lead in pipes, or pipes made of lead, and there was a decision to move the old water source to a new water source, and that led to lead leaching through the pipes into people's water, and this got a lot of people in Flint sick, and Flint has been a fairly depressed community. Actually, my father is from Detroit, and I'm familiar with the area, and it's there's been a lot of heartache and pain that is undescribable in Flint. So what happened this week coming out of that story is that the ex-governor Rick Snyder, who was governor at the time, who made the decision to change the water supply, or at least approve the decision, has now been charged. He pleaded not guilty to willful neglect of duty or over the deadly contamination of water in the city of Flint. He could face up to a year in jail if convicted. State prosecutors filed indictments against eight other defendants as well. The crisis drew national attention after 12 people died when the city switched its water supply to the Flint River in 2014 in a bid to save money. Nine manslaughter charges have also been leveled against the state's former health director. The criminal charges follow a new investigation into the case. Prosecutors dropped previous charges in 2019, pledging a more thorough probe. So this is good just to see something moving, because again, this is back in 2014, so justice has been way too delayed here, and it's good to see some sort of movement here because people need closure and justice on this issue. It is really, really one of the bad ones. So clearly, it wasn't the governor who was out to get people. It was a series of people, engineers, as they said, the health director. But it just makes you question what was happening here, because supplying water to people is not a new issue, and it brings up memories for me too, because not only is my father from the Flint area, but also I grew up on a farm outside of Walkerton on in Canada, and when I was about to go to high school there, the water got contaminated with E. coli, and several people died from that, and it was a really tragic incident as well. So yeah, water and natural resources are essential, and when any of the metrics of the environment goes wrong like this, it is incredibly tragic, and especially when it's done through both in Walkerton and Flint's case, where it was done through willful neglect. It's just not right. So glad to see some justice being served. Hopefully, at least moving in that direction in Flint. Okay, well, I was gonna show you this this tweet that happened today, but it looks like it's been deleted. But I will try to see the original one, anyways. Okay, so this tweet from Elon Musk saying, "I am donating $100 million towards a prize for best carbon capture technology." That's pretty exciting, and I love that Elon Musk is always searching for new frontiers, and that's kind of what I was talking about with the Keystone XL pipeline, is that anything that is a traditional income generator and causing harm, we need to take the funds and use it as a stepping stone to bring us to a new frontier. And anyone who's engineering in engineering is always doing that, and that's why I love engineers. So the fact that he's offering up $100 million towards a prize for best carbon capture technology is pretty cool. And it also makes me think of Jeff Bezos' Earth Fund, which also is very beneficial. And I mean, like, people are very bitter about this. Like, it's true that these people need to pay taxes, and like, we shouldn't be relying on the rich for like handouts necessarily. But I mean, they don't need to be doing this. So the fact that they are doing it, I mean, well, I'm gonna take it, and it's a good thing. Like, it's a net good thing. So, it's just funny that this tweet that's been deleted now from this girl in my industry who is a who works at the World Climate Change and Environment, and she is verified even though she has much less followers than me. And I keep wondering why I'm having like conflicts with people in academia specifically. But she wrote, what I can say is, before she deleted the tweet, is she said, "I can't." She said something like, "I can't roll my eyes harder at this. We shouldn't be relying on rich people for handouts. And by the way, Elon, the best carbon capture technology is trees. Duh." Something like that. So what I said is, I was like, "Yes, what an idiot for trying to innovate new carbon capture technologies." And then she said, "I would love to be proven wrong on this." And then she deleted the tweet. But it just shows you like the attitude that people have in our industry is like, there's someone that is literally trying to solve our problems, but they're so caught up in politics. They're so been so brainwashed into identity politics, their political leanings, their political indoctrinations, that they can't think properly, and it has discredited our entire industry. So what I just presented, looking at the Keystone XL pipeline, saying that you know what, both sides have good pros and cons, and there's really no answer that is gonna be the silver bullet. That is what is missing, because people like this are the ones that say, Keystone XL is bad. It's bad for the environment. You know, thank God for Joe Biden being in here and solving all our problems. But the truth is like, there's a lot more nuance that needs to be had in these conversations and heterodoxy. But that is being completely demonized, and I'm feeling that heat more and more the more I talk about the issues, from getting heat from both sides, because the truth is that I genuinely want to find out what is right, and I don't, I'm not here to pander, but most people are, and that's unfortunate. But because I'm not willing to sign up with a tribe, I leave myself without protection, and that's probably gonna haunt me in the future. But I mean, I need to do what I need to do, and I feel like this is exactly what I need to communicate. So just a quick update before we close off this week's episode. I am out of quarantine, which is absolutely beautiful, because it was starting to really drive me crazy staying inside for so long. And they switched me to another room here at my university, so I'm with some flatmates, and that's good. They're all nice. I've started my actual formally started my program this week as well. And been learning a lot about sustainable cities and regeneration, more from a urban planning perspective than an environmental planning perspective. So I have been able to learn some stuff, although I do find most of it familiar. And we have gotten our first assignment, which is to look at our home city, and then choose a site and create a proposal on that site which meets sustainable design principles. So even though Toronto is not actually my home city, as I said, I grew up on a farm about 4 hours away from Toronto, I still am going to choose that city because it's the closest, I guess, to me, and I did work for the city for so long. And I think that for this site, I'm going to choose the Portlands, which would be a good site, I think, just because it's so high profile. For a background, it's right on the water. ABC Sidewalks, which is Google, they had bought the property and were about to design or to develop on it, but they kept having conflicts with the city, and then it was like a whole problem, and then they pulled out after a while, and now the site is vacant still and undergoing accepting new proposals. So I'm gonna look at it and give my two cents as part of my assignment, and it's really interesting for my for me anyways. So I'm very busy, but I'm gonna keep doing this kind of stuff. So thank you everyone for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.